Hello, and welcome to EDUCAUSE Now. I'm Jerry Bain. The changing landscape of scholarly communications is an ongoing process, and on this edition of EDUCAUSE Now, we talk with Kara Malenfant, Scholarly Communications and Government Relations Specialist for the Association of College and Research Libraries. Also, next week is the EDUCAUSE Learning Initiative 2011 Annual Conference in Washington, D.C. We'll speak with ELI directors Malcolm Brown and Veronica Diaz to get a rundown for next week's conference. Kara Malenfant is the Scholarly Communications and Government Relations Specialist for the Association of College and Research Libraries. She recently spoke with Adrian Alexander, who's the Dean of the McFarland Library at the University of Tulsa, about the changing mentalities and service models for librarians and the evolution of scholarly communication.
So thanks for joining us today, Kara.
Thanks for inviting me.
So changes in scholarly communication are forcing librarians to shift their mental models and alter some services. So if you could talk about some of the changes that are happening with libraries and in the academy and how librarians are adjusting to new realities.
Generally, what I hear people talk about when they talk about their changing roles are seeing themselves as less of stewards of collections and more as partners with faculty. And so what that can mean is really thinking differently about how we interact with faculty, how we talk to faculty, and getting involved in the research process a lot earlier, not thinking just about the dissemination and the archiving, but even in some cases, you know, how is the research being designed and what does that mean? And that really changes how traditionally librarians have thought of themselves. I'm trying to think back of when I was in library school and what we thought of in terms of how librarians were. I don't think we ever talked about being partners with faculty.
Now, how does that change the faculty view of librarians, do you think?
You know, I hear great stories about faculty members who are really eager to have that assistance and to have that true partnership and true collaboration. And at other times, I think faculty themselves feel so burdened and so overwhelmed, just like we all do, that it can seem like one more thing, what kinds of relationships they've built up as individuals and how they know these people and how they interact with them.
Tell us a little bit now, if you could, about a case study that you did with the University of Minnesota, which explored how library staff become engaged in furthering the goals of an outreach program and how they view these changes in their work. Particularly, what are some of the leadership principles that foster participation in this kind of change effort?
Sure. Well, I should say I became interested in what University of Minnesota was doing because I got to know Karen Williams through the ACRL Institute on Scholarly Communication. And we do 2.5-day intensive programs around building scholarly communication outreach programs. And every time she would talk about what they were doing at University of Minnesota, the room would sort of collectively gasp, like, oh, how are you doing that? And how are you getting librarians involved? And how does that work? And it seemed like people were just so curious. Since then, she's written about it for ARL, and she even did a webinar recently for the ARL-ACRL Institute on Scholarly Communication. But about 2.5 years ago, I asked if I could just come and talk with them and just learn a little more. In part, it was to fulfill a requirement I had for a PhD that I'm pursuing, where I had to actually go do a case study and dip my toe in the water and learn what it was like to be a researcher. So I thought, well, this is a fascinating case. Let me learn about it. They built a team to do this work within the library. It wasn't one person saying, we're going to do scholarly communication outreach. It was a whole collective of peers coming together and trying to figure out what that meant and how they would do it, how they would develop tools to support each other so that they could feel free to take risks in talking with faculty differently and rewarding them for risk-taking, for doing something maybe a little bit outside their comfort zone. And it was a multi-pronged message over time coming from lots of different people, not just one person within the library saying, you know, we're going to have to be changing how we're doing our work. This is part of the changing, evolving nature of the profession. This is part of what it means to be a librarian going forward, is engaging in these kind of conversations. So those were some of the principles that were most interesting to me, sort of broad-based support involving lots of stakeholders, not just coming from the top down saying, you will do this, but figuring it out together as a group.
Now, in your role at ACRL, you work with academic libraries ranging from big public research institutions like Minnesota to small private liberal arts colleges. And so how do you see the role of the librarian in scholarly communication changing in terms of, is it getting more pervasive across the profession, or is it still primarily limited to the bigger, more dynamic institutions, would you say?
You know, it's funny. I think people have the impression that bigger institutions have more resources to devote towards doing scholarly communication activities. But what I've noticed is that the smaller institutions, those librarians are already working with faculty. They already have these relationships. And so they already have a big advantage in some regards when it comes to doing outreach, when it comes to talking with faculty, working with faculty, being in their classrooms, helping them with grant proposals, being a co-PI on a grant. Some of them are already doing that and have been doing it for years. And so they may be much closer in a way than some of the larger institutions.
So that's a nice segue into our next topic. How do those scholarly communication strategies vary across discipline on a typical campus? Are there different approaches that you take depending on the area in which a faculty member may be working?
Oh, I think absolutely. I mean, I think there's so much of a difference in how disciplines view their work. I think, you know, there are a lot of things, for example, historians are doing digitally that's very adventurous. And there seems to be a little more acceptance in that particular discipline for doing some of this adventurous digital scholarship than there may be in others. You know, certainly the natural sciences and hard sciences are an area where librarians have been pushing for change because we see the economics as being unsustainable. But that's maybe not the same message that works with people in a humanities or less of an empirical tradition, more of an interpretive tradition or constructivist tradition. It's still touchy. I mean, I don't know that there's any one answer or any one strategy is going to work for every discipline for sure and not for every campus.
Well, one of the things that ACRL advocates is building sustainable models of scholarly communication. What are some of the principles that go into building a sustainable scholarly communication model, and how do those vary?
You know, there are so many different models out there, and I particularly enjoyed reading the ARL Ithaca report that came out last year, where it identified over 200 different new ways of doing scholarly communication. I think there are a lot of different flavors out there. I don't know that there's really necessarily one path forward. I don't think that there needs to be. I think some of the principles are constrained currently by historic practices and by promotion and tenure. But if we didn't have those constraining systems, what I think librarians would like to see, what I think ACRL would like to see, what I think I would like to see and others in the profession would like to see are, you know, scholarship that's sustainable economically, that gets information out more rapidly so that we're not caught in a publishing cycle that leaves things lagging so far behind. Things that don't disadvantage digital scholarship, that really recognize that can be have just as much merit and just as much worth as traditionally printed scholarship. And so I think some of those constraining practices don't look to me like they're going to be going away anytime soon. And I know that there have been big calls by other groups like AAU and ARL came out last year with a big statement on,
yes,
you know, now is the time, mm-hmm, seize the moment, we've got to change. And so I think the more we can see successful examples happening and we can see that scholars are getting rewarded and that it works, all the better.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Kara.
It's been a pleasure talking with you.
The pleasure's been all mine. Thanks again.
Kara Malenfant and Adrian Alexander. Next week, from February 14th through the 16th, the EDUCAUSE Learning Initiative 2011 Annual Conference takes place. I spoke with the ELI directors just this morning about what they're looking forward to at next week's conference.
Is there still time to register for people that are interested in participating in the conference?
Yes, there is time to register, particularly if folks wanted to register for the online option. That we have no registration cap for whatsoever. So if it's too late to make travel arrangements, but one still wanted to participate in the annual meeting, it's certainly possible to do so by registering for the online option.
What can online participants look forward to next week?
One of the things that they can look forward to is that we have a set of events, most of which are, of course, shared with the face-to-face meeting. So they will see all the general and featured session speakers as well as half of the concurrent sessions. But there's also a variety of interviews and other events that are just going to be online only.
Yes, there's a lot of follow-up with some of our main speakers, so the audience will really be able to engage and ask other questions about things that they'd heard earlier.
Right, you're featuring some interviews with some of the keynote speakers between sessions?
That's correct. So, for example, Professor Eric Mazur of Harvard University is our lead-off keynote speaker, and following his session in the center ballroom, he's going to be available online, and Veronica will be talking to him about some of the pioneering work he's done in his teaching at Harvard, and that will be an exclusive for the online audience.
Great. What are some of the goals that you guys want to put forward at the 2011 conference?
Well, as you know, Jerry, the theme of the meeting is educating in the open. And so openness is our theme this year. And we are fortunate to have someone of the stature, Professor David Wiley at Brigham Young University, who will be giving a general session address on Tuesday on precisely this topic. So we have a number of talks and presentations all swirling about the topic of openness, and openness in the broadest sense, openness in terms of course delivery, openness in terms of academic and course resources, really trying to explore the full gamut of openness as it relates to education and higher education.
The other goal that I'd say we have is to infuse sessions that are illustrative of our Seeking Evidence of Impact initiative that we launched last summer. And we have about 25 sessions throughout the entire program in various formats, both pre-conference seminars, poster sessions, general and featured speakers, all throughout the 3 days, so that folks can really participate in those kinds of thematic discussions around evidence of promoting effective teaching and learning throughout the program.
Well, is there any other sessions or people you'd like to highlight for next week's program?
Another sort of goal that we have is to really diversify the program and give people an opportunity to engage in a variety of different ways. And so in addition to some of the more traditional formats, we have on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday something that we call experiences sessions and innovation showcases. The experiences sessions are hands-on, and they will be using iPads in a model learning space that is outfitted by Herman Miller and has various technology tools in it. And then on Tuesday, we have lightning round sessions around various topics, for instance, reconsidering the LMS and openness, mobile learning, online innovations. So people get a lot of exposure to a lot of examples around campuses and institutions that are working in that area. And they get to, in sort of a rapid way, be exposed to different projects that folks have been involved in and hear about the results.
Wonderful. Well, we're looking forward to it next week, and thanks for giving us an update, and we'll hear back from you after the conference.
Thank you very much, Jerry.
ELI Directors Veronica Diaz and Malcolm Brown. You can still register for the online version of the conference by visiting www.educause.edu/ELI11. Thanks for joining us on this edition of EDUCAUSE Now. If you'd like to find out more about the stories and interviews you hear on the podcast, visit www.educause.edu/now. I'm Jerry Bain for EDUCAUSE. Thanks for listening.